Berlin Stichwort Drehbuch, der Podcast vom Deutschen Drehbuchverband. Ich bin Frank Zeller.
Und mein Name ist Oliver Schütte. Ja, Frank, du hast heute ein Gespräch geführt, tatsächlich mit einem Autoren, Will Buckingham, ein amerikanischer Autor. Das Gespräch ist ja auch auf Englisch, das du geführt hast. Und es geht diesmal nicht um eine Serie, nicht um einen Film oder dergleichen, sondern es geht um ein Format. Es geht um ein sehr neues Format, nämlich Microdrama oder Mikrodrama, auch auf Deutsch. Und ich muss gestehen, ich kannte das gar nicht, wusste das gar nicht. Kannst du uns ein bisschen erklären, was das überhaupt ist?
Ich hatte auch bis vor kurzem noch nichts davon gehört, aber es ist tatsächlich ein sehr interessantes neues Format, was auch sehr viel Wachstum hat und so. Also das wird auf jeden Fall mehr werden in nächster Zeit. Worum geht's? Leute können auf ihrem Handy jetzt auch Serien gucken, die speziell dafür gemacht wurden, für das Anschauen auf dem Handy und sehr schnelllebig, sehr schnell gemacht sind, weil man das dann sicherlich auch in der U-Bahn oder wo auch immer zwischendrin guckt. Also die Episoden sind sehr, sehr kurz, meistens nur 1 bis 3 Minuten lang und sehr stark Cliffhanger getrieben auch, denn du musst ja die Leute immer bei der Stange halten und so. Und was ich auch sehr interessant finde, ist, dass es halt ein Format ist, was ganz radikal davon ausgeht, was wollen die Leute sehen. Denn hier geht es um Geld verdienen, das ist klar. Das soll die Leute festhalten. Es soll die Leute sofort anspringen und dann festhalten, sodass sie weitergucken und auch dafür bezahlen. Das heißt, ganz radikal, was geht bei den Leuten? Und zwar, was geht in dieser Situation, wo du halt so zwischendrin mal kurz guckst auf dem Handy? Und ja, man nennt es auch Vertical Drama, weil es halt speziell fürs Handy gemacht ist. Das heißt, du hast hier kein 16:9 Format mehr wie im Fernsehen, sondern 9:16. Das Handy hat ja im Grunde das gleiche Seitenverhältnis, worauf man sich auf Fernsehscreens geeinigt hat. 16:9 ist das ja immer. Und ja, wir haben das jetzt also hochkant, weil man sich daran gewöhnt hat, das Handy hochkant zu halten. So Porträtformat nennt sich das. Und so werden aber diese Serien auch gefilmt. Das heißt, du hast eigentlich meistens nur eine Person im Bild. Das passt gut in dieses Hochkantformat. Oder mal zwei, vielleicht mal so ein bisschen over shoulder oder so ein bisschen am Arm vorbei irgendwie, dass man zwei sieht und die andere so angedeutet ist. So richtige Totalen sind eher selten. Und ja, auf diese Weise, da musst du dich drauf einstellen, wenn du das schreibst. Will Buckingham ist ein amerikanischer Autor, der aber in Berlin lebt und für dieses Format viel schreibt und auch drüber spricht. Er ist auch auf Podien eingeladen gewesen und so. Und er erklärt es auch selber, es kommt also ursprünglich aus China und ist dort entwickelt worden, das Format. Ist aber auch in Amerika inzwischen stark im Kommen. Also ich habe irgendwo gelesen, dass da inzwischen 700 Millionen Dollar Umsatz im Jahr generiert werden. Das ist für Amerika nicht nix zumindest und kann sich schon sehen lassen. Und auch in Frankreich und Portugal scheint es jetzt Fahrt aufzunehmen. So ein bisschen in Deutschland ist es in den Kinderschuhen, aber es kommt auch ganz klar. Und
mich erinnert das ja ein bisschen an Quibi. Ich weiß nicht, wer sich daran noch erinnert. Das war vor ungefähr 6, 7 Jahren mal eine Plattform, die gegründet worden ist von einem sehr bekannten, renommierten amerikanischen Produzenten, Jeffrey Katzenberg, der immerhin auch mit Steven Spielberg zusammengearbeitet hat und eine Firma hatte. Und einer Geschäftsführerin von eBay groß gestartet damals nach dem Motto, ja, wir machen kurzes Format, wir machen das fürs Handy dezidiert an der Bushaltestelle oder in einer Bahn, kann man dann so 7 bis 8 Minuten sich angucken, ist tatsächlich an den Markt gegangen, hochkarätig. Steven Spielberg hat eine Serie gemacht, Christoph Waltz hat eine Serie gemacht, auch, also das waren interessante erzählerische Formate. Fast kann man sagen, das große Pech war, dass sie im März 2020 starteten. Und das war eine Zeit, wo niemand mehr an der Bushaltestelle stand oder in irgendeiner S-Bahn oder in irgendeinem Zug saß. Das ging relativ schnell ein. Die Frage ist natürlich, geht dieses Format dann auch wieder relativ schnell ein? Das wird man beobachten können und müssen. Steckt da genügend Power dahinter? Steckt da genügend Interesse bei den Zuschauern denn dahinter auch? Vielleicht ist auch ganz interessant, mal das mit einer weiteren Entwicklung zu verbinden, die es nämlich gibt. KI wird ja auch und ist derzeit ja schon in der Lage, relativ einfach mit Textprompts für jeden von uns kleine Filme zu erzeugen. Und vielleicht verbindet sich dieses tatsächlich mit dem Mikrodrama dann, dass jeder von uns zu Hause sitzen kann und tatsächlich so ein Mikrodrama erzeugen kann. Das wird man sehen. Vielleicht ist es dann tatsächlich eine Entwicklung von zwei Dingen, die später wird man vielleicht sagen, die einfach zusammengehören. Insofern ist das ein Blick in die Zukunft, glaube ich. Und ich würde sagen, wir hören da einfach mal in dein Gespräch rein.
Well, it's good to have you on our podcast. It's great. Hello.
Hi, thank you, Frank. Thanks for having me.
To start with, you are American, an American guy living in Berlin. Maybe you can talk a little bit how you came to Germany and how you broke into the film business. What was your beginning? What was your start?
I guess it's kind of a little bit of a crazy story, but yeah, I mean, I went to film school, NYU Film School, at an international campus to get my master's degree. I actually went to school in Singapore. I had applied to the New York campus and I got a rejection and then an immediate offer to apply, to go to Singapore. So I did that, and then I sort of went the normal route after I graduated of going to LA and working in the film industry there. I was an assistant, I was a script reader, I did a little bit of writing. But yeah, it was I think as many people know, it's kind of a rat race out there. And I got an opportunity to apply to a job in Berlin, writing romance novels and erotic novels for an immersive fiction startup. And that was not really something I had ever done. I'd been working a little bit in the romance genre, but I'd never written, for instance, a werewolf romance novel. And it turned out to be a natural talent for me. So very suddenly, I moved from LA to Berlin. This was 2019. And I spent 2 years working for this immersive fiction startup, learning about werewolves and bad boy billionaires and mafia bosses and all these strange sort of subgenres of romantic fiction. I had a couple movies get made in the US that were on cable TV. And then, yeah, I did the serialized program in Berlin. And then, yeah, I've sort of been integrating into the German marketplace and European marketplace for the last 4 years.
Okay, you mean the Serial Ice program, or what was that?
Serialize is like, it's a little ironic that I did it because it teaches Europeans the American writer's room system.
Yes.
So we spend a lot of time, workshopping each other's pitches in a writer's room type scenario, and then everybody sort of emerges from the project with a heavily workshopped pitch for a TV show, usually a pilot also. And then it's like a 8 or 9 month residency, and you meet a lot of industry professionals along the way, and it sort of gives you a lot of tools to be a screenwriting successful, hopefully, screenwriting professional in the European marketplace.
Right, so today we want to talk to you about the vertical format. You've
Yeah.
been on some panels and you were talking about this kind of stuff on some events in the industry, and maybe you can explain a little bit what is it? What is this kind of format?
Yeah, so vertical dramas are kind of a format that emerged from Asia, and they're basically like soap operas. Every episode, though, is about 90 seconds to 2 minutes long, and strung together, most, quote unquote, seasons are about the length of a feature film. So, like 70, 80 minutes. Some can be a lot longer. But basically, they're competing with eyes on your phone. They're called vertical dramas because they are meant to be seen on the vertical screen of a phone. So the stories really grab you as a TikTok video or an Instagram reel would. There's
Very little subtlety in the storytelling. It's just sort of like an immediate dopamine hit of story with very big cliffhangers. And yeah, I think I said already, but there's kind of soap operas, romance. Yeah, very, very similar to the immersive fiction that I was doing a few years ago. Yeah, it's basically all the same genres.
Okay, and you said it started in Asia,
Yeah.
but now is there a real market for that in Europe or in the United States?
Yeah, I mean, I started seeing these videos. I don't know, maybe it was summer 2023, 2024. A company called Real Shorts was doing it. They're China owned, but they have an office or like a a branch called Crazy Maple that's based in California, and they were doing these crazy like werewolf soap opera things, and I didn't really know if that was going to be popular, but of course, from my experience writing romantic werewolf stories, I sort of recognized the tropes. But yeah, the last couple years, it's really seemed to emerge in the U.S. I think it's like the same audience that was reading these romantic fiction stories, kind of like I don't want to stereotype too much, but from what I know about the data, it's mostly like female viewers in middle America. Some are more like teenagers, but there's a lot of like women over 35 watching these videos too. And yeah, the last, I don't know, 6 months or so, it's been a very hot topic in Germany, it seems, also, which, yeah, it's interesting.
And are there some of them also produced in Germany, or is it all an international market which is produced in the States more or less?
Yeah, there's some coming out of Germany now. I'm starting to work with German production companies, but I'm by no means the first one. I know Red Pony, which is a branch of Saxonia Media. They're releasing one next month, I think, on a platform. Constantine has a couple projects, I think. There's a studio in the Black Forest called Black Forest Studios. Very crazy name, but they're getting into the vertical drama market heavily. I'm not sure if all these are German language or, but I would assume so, yeah.
When you first saw this kind of format, when you watched your first vertical drama, what was your spontaneous reaction? What do you think of it?
I think the first ones that started coming to the West were very low production value, frankly. I thought it looked goofy as hell. It's a werewolf story where they don't have the budget to even have someone turning into a werewolf. So I thought it was pretty absurd. My old company, Inkit, they had produced their own attempts at basically adapting some fiction series that I worked on into vertical drama. And I thought it looked pretty bad. So it wasn't something that was immediately enticing to me. But the industry has evolved very rapidly. And I think more probably, at least in the West, like probably due to like the actor strike and the writer strike. So there's a little bit more talent coming in to work on these and really making the most of like the low budget. So, I mean, I would still say compared to traditional television, or TV movies, like it's definitely lower quality, but they are getting more and more interesting. And yeah, I mean, I would say, some of the early ones look like a student film, and now it looks closer to maybe like the early days of television, but shot on 4K. So it's getting better very quickly.
And how is the process of the production? Is it more like a soap opera, or is it it's not shot in studio, it's mostly on location, what I've seen. Is that true?
Yeah, some Well, in China, they're starting to build really big studios, and I think it seems like that kind of investment's happening also in the United States now, but that's very new. I think none of these studios have actually built, or if so, they've only opened very recently. But yeah, a lot of it's shot on location. It's a lot of billionaire stories, so they'll rent a big house, basically, and they'll have the bar will be in the kitchen or something of the house, for instance. So they'll shoot out all the locations there, or as many as possible. But yeah, they shoot them in 5 or 6 long days. The writing process, I guess, I mean, takes longer than that. And the editing process, I think, is actually the most essential during the whole thing. But yeah, it's a lot of like one takes from my understanding. I have a friend from film school who's a director, and yeah, he shoots, I don't know, like 12, 15-hour days for a week, and then yeah,
So that
wraps
is
it up
about
after that.
90 minutes in total, shot in 5 or 6 days. Is it that?
Yeah, maybe 80 minutes, but yeah, it's basically a feature shot in a week every time.
What kind of equipment do they use? Are they shooting with mobile phones as well, or with professional cameras? Or?
No, I mean, I've never been on a set actually, but they shoot with like a professional camera. I don't know. I'm not like a gearhead, but I have seen sort of like the video village, and basically, yeah, you can't see it on the podcast, but they'll have like a phone aspect ratio on the monitor, so you're able to easily see like what would be on the phone, but yeah, they use like real film cameras, I think, or digital film cameras.
And who is financing this kind of format, or how, where the money does come from?
I think it's a mix. The biggest companies like RealShorts and DramaBox, those are Chinese owned. So yeah, it's Chinese money coming in. Many of the big ones also seem to have some sort of Chinese connection. Some are like, I work for a company based in France called Shorts. They're an offshoot of some kind of tech company called Loony, and they have a lot of other avenues. So I think they basically, were making money in other aspects of their enterprise and decided to get in on the vertical game, and they have a reasonably successful app, or it's at least profitable enough to keep going. Yeah, so I think the money's coming from different places, but basically it's all tech money now. I mean, I would say, 90%, and more recently some like Hollywood studios are making investments. Fox Studios just made a big investment into a Ukrainian company called Holy Water. Netflix, I think, is starting to produce some. I think they've been like beta testing, or maybe it's not even beta testing, some sort of vertical outlet on the Netflix startup page. Disney just released something, I think, last week called Verts, and I know they're financing some series as well. So yeah, some traditional media companies are starting to get involved.
But in the end, most of the money should come in from advertising, from video clips, which are like on YouTube or so. You will see a spot of someone.
Yes and no. A lot of the money, a lot of the profit is made because of the model of how they do the show. So it's basically based on binge watching. So there's all these individual platforms that have their own series. They will give you the first 5 or 6 episodes for free up to a paywall. But they're very hooky. They really suck you into the story, or at least that's the idea. And as soon as you get to like the cliffhanger, you really need to see the next episode. That's when the paywall comes up. And many of them will charge sort of an unreasonable amount of money for you to binge watch the whole series. I mean, some customers are paying, 30, 40, 50 euros to watch a whole series. You can watch ads to get some free episodes. But yeah, basically, many viewers are, yeah, just getting hooked and paying maybe a little bit too much money, or at least more than you would pay to watch a movie in the cinemas to watch these things on your phone.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about your series you have written for this kind of
Yeah.
format. So you have written two of them so far.
I've written five, actually.
Five,
Yeah.
excellent. Okay. So what?
I just sent you two. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So those are the ones you're most proud of, I guess. So let's talk about those two, maybe. Yeah. Or.
Yeah. Yeah, so my favorite series I've done so far is called Matrimony. This was for a Korean platform called Viglu. One of the reasons I like it so much is because actually it was adapted from a novella I wrote several years ago. Just a goofy rom-com I wrote for this company called Scribd. And yeah, I still had the rights to the novellas I wrote for this company, and I thought, yeah, I don't know how many people read the novella, but I always thought this story was fun, and I had tried actually pitching it around Germany as like a TV movie with not so much response, but as soon as I pitched it to Viglu, they really liked it. Maybe they liked it a little too much because they shot actually my first draft of the script. But I thought it turned out really fun, and it's been a big success for them. And it's yeah the it's in a lot of their marketing, and it was like one of the top 10 shows for them in the US and other territories for a lot of last years. So yeah, very happy with that one.
And what is the story? Can you just describe a little bit the story?
Yeah. Yeah, so the premise is a very familiar trope in the world of vertical dramas. It's a contract marriage. So in this case, there's a billionaire underwear model who is irresponsible, and his father wants him to take control of the family company. His dog walker, who is kind of a workaholic, very motivated. Her sister gets an illness, and because it's set in the United States, there's no insurance that will cover her experimental treatment, so she really needs money. So the father of the billionaire underwear model says, "Hey, I'll give you the money you need to help your sister if you agree to marry my son and teach him some responsibility." So it's sort of this enemies to lovers, also a familiar trope in the vertical world of this, yeah, spoiled underwear model and working class dog walker learning to love each other. And yeah, there's some very cute moments in it, and it's a lot of fun. And I don't know, one reason it's different than some of the other verticals, a lot of them have sort of cat fights and slapping and really witchy antagonists, that sort of thing, but this is sort of more character focused, and the love interests are kind of like a conventional rom-com, like antagonists to each other. They're the source of conflict for each other more than anything
Okay.
in the story. And yeah, it was very fun to work on.
And perhaps you can also talk a little bit about the other one, the other example you sent me, the
Yes.
Serving My
Yeah.
Enemy Alpha. What's
Serving My
this
Enemy
kind of
Alpha.
story?
Yeah, this was one of the first ones I wrote. I think this is my second one, but as my first collaboration with Shorts, the company I mentioned earlier that's based in France. And yeah, they were like, we want a werewolf story. We want to incorporate maids, and we want a revenge story. What can you deliver? So I came up with this story that was originally called Maid versus Alpha. But yeah, this was just a it was just fun to play in the werewolf world. I really had no expectations for how it would turn out, but yeah, I thought the what they delivered was really fun. They shot it all in this house in some woods, I guess, outside of LA, and it really looks like a werewolf pack house. And I thought the actors were very fun. And one of the guy who plays the antagonist in this, the evil alpha, was just nominated for some fan award for best villain. So I was, happy to see that. But yeah, it's just a fun werewolf story.
Okay. So where did you get the ideas for that? Is it just your imagination, just what you love as a story, or is there some kind of marketing analysis involved? Are they telling you, well, people want to watch that, we have some data about that?
Yeah, I mean, I so when I was working at Inkit, this immersive fiction company, writing these werewolf romance novels, that was all coming from data. They had like a self-publishing platform similar to Wattpad, if you've heard of that or if anybody's heard of that. And they were using that to identify what are the most popular stories their users are writing, what are getting the most engagement. Maybe we can bring in a team of professional writers to make these stories more commercial and use the data to, optimize the storytelling as much as possible for the audience. So that's kind of how I learned how to write these big hooks. That's where I learned about the genres of werewolf and billionaire and mafia, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, when I, with verticals, it's a mix of how I pitch the stories, because sometimes they are like, what do you have? And sometimes, like with Serving My Enemy Alpha, they give me some elements they're looking for, and I try and stir up something they want. My favorite genres to work in, generally, on more traditional projects, are rom-com and comedy and a bit of romance. So, for me, it falls into like my interests. But I also, yeah, was studying the audience when I was doing immersive fiction on a very close level. I mean, we would rewrite chapters if, there was a big drop-off in a book we were working on, for instance, and then A/B test the chapter. So I kind of have a sense, based on that experience, of like what the users want, what the audience want out of a vertical drama. And that's, yeah, something that's become kind of like internalized for me now. So yeah, it's not so difficult for me to figure out like what the client wants and what the audience wants.
Okay. What is different if you write this kind of show from the work on something else like films or like normal series?
I would say one is the timeline, because I mean some of the companies I work for really care about the development process, and maybe it's 3 or 4 month writing period from the pitch to the outline, a couple script drafts, but some of them, expect you to work much faster. And I've written scripts in a week or 2 weeks, that get shot. Maybe there are, like with Matrimony, which I mean, all things considered, I thought turned out good and was a hit for them. But yeah, I wrote that script and maybe, I mean, it was a book first, so I guess that was the first draft. But I wrote that script in maybe a week, and then they shot it. So you just work much faster. It is the main thing, and then any subtlety to the storytelling is really gone. You want to get in the case of a romance or soap opera, you want to get the romantic leads in the same scene together as soon as possible. First, second, third episode max. It's basically the inciting incident is happening in episode one, instead of, I mean, yeah, in a movie, it's page 15, obviously, or thereabouts. I guess in a TV show, you would generally have like a exciting or intriguing teaser scene to start out, but then you can kind of catch up with the story. But yeah, in a vertical drama, the story begins right away.
And you mentioned that you have to attract the attention of the audience every 2 minutes or so. How do you do that? So that they will stick to it.
Yeah, that's always the trick. Cliffhangers can be good, or they can be cheap, right? I guess the cheap way would just be to cut the scene in the middle, and then pick it up. Somebody enters the room. Who is it? You'll find out the next episode, Or you just, yeah, end on like a very dramatic beat where you have to know what happens next. But I would say that's the that during the writing process, that's probably the thing we work on the most, of like making sure each episode has, ends on a thrill and pulls you into the next one. I mean, in some ways it does, it helps with other kinds of writing because, even in a TV show or a movie, you also want to pull somebody into the next scene. It doesn't need to be in as unsubtle of a way as we do it in the vertical drama world. But, generally, you want people to anticipate what comes next and be excited to watch it. So I think in that sense, it does, like, yeah, I'm learning a lot doing these cliffhangers.
That was my next question. Did you learn things from writing this kind of show, which you didn't know before?
I think the cliffhangers for sure. I never knew I could never knew I could write so fast. Also is an exciting thing. Yeah, I think just the economic storytelling of the whole thing, and really getting a story going. I do like subtlety in storytelling, and I do like scenes where, maybe two characters are talking about what just happened and processing, an event in the story. But now when I'm writing on verticals, if I have scenes like that, I mean, I'm adapting another novella I wrote now and trying to use all the scenes I have. But then, yeah, now I've been doing it long enough where I'm like, okay, these two characters are talking. That's not a scene or an episode that somebody's gonna like pay for. Like, how can I incorporate this, this dialogue that is maybe necessary to progress the story into a scene where something's actually happening and it's gonna pull, the audience into the next. So yeah, I guess that's a good thing and a bad thing. I mean, I like a story that unfolds subtly, but yeah, it's very helpful for commercial storytelling.
And you said before also that the characters in those shows are quite stereotypes, more or less. And also the type of the story needs to be like a pattern or something which has been there before. Is that necessary for this kind of storytelling, or how does it come?
I think it, as of now, yes. I think, because you're getting into the story so quickly, the characters, at least as you're introduced to them, they need to be some sort of stereotype that you recognize or archetype. And maybe they do have some unique qualities at, as you get into the later episodes that makes them specific. But yeah, basically you're playing with archetype action figures in these kind of stories. And, some of the companies are really rigid with that. And, I was working, I probably shouldn't say the company, but I was working for one company, and, I had a male lead who had flaws, which, as we know as screenwriters, is like an essential for a character. And they said, no, according to our data, actually, he can't have any flaws. So he needs to be perfect. That's who people are falling in love with. So, the main character can think he has a flaw, but we need to make it very clear right away that's not a flaw at all. And I was very like turned off by that. But other companies, I mean, yeah, I think this, like Matrimony I worked on, the male lead is very flawed and very silly, and an archetype, but rather unconventional as far as these verticals go. And maybe that's why it had some success, because it was just a little bit different than the typical formula.
And which is also to me is obvious that all those stories are quite far from a normal reality, you know, from everyday life or so. It's all in a very remote world, more or less. Is that also something which comes from the data or from the experience, what people want to watch? Or is it just that it's easier to tell stories that in this kind of quick format?
I mean, it all comes from the world of romantic fiction. I mean, some people might be getting into this genre for the first time with verticals, but I mean, there is this massive ocean of romantic fiction that's propping up the whole publishing industry, basically. And, there's different levels to it, but I think a lot of people who are the biggest consumers really like the escapism of it, like the simplicity of, like werewolves, being in the werewolf tropes, that they're chosen mates. There's only one person for you, and that's it. And that's usually creates the conflict in the story. Somebody doesn't want the bond, but then they work it out in the end. I think this sort of simplicity, this fairy tale quality, this like fantasy or romanticy of it, like, is the attraction. They don't like people don't really want, or the biggest consumers of this stuff don't really want something that's set in the real world, because life is getting too complicated.
Yeah, also the gender stereotypes in the stories seem to be very strong, and they are not totally traditional, I would say. There's also very special female characters, for instance, very strong one, very rich, and so on. But still, it is a bit old-fashioned and at the same time. So how would you describe the male-female relationships and those kind of story.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little tricky. I would say it is more conservative leaning, like more traditional. I think kind of connected to what I was saying about, romanticy, fantasy, that sort of thing. I have theories, basically. But yeah, a lot of when I was working for the romantic fiction company, we would have to call users every week. Everybody in the company did. So I talked personally to a lot of readers of my books, which are very similar to the vertical dramas. And a lot of these, I mean, they're all women, but they have complicated lives at home. They're army wives, or they're in like a loveless marriage, and or they're it's like an old lady, or husband died, or it's a teenager, doesn't have a boyfriend, something like this. And yeah, I think there's like this simplicity, not just in the idea that it's a fairy tale, but also in these relationships, that the main characters had. They're basically always straight people. Whether they're a werewolf or not, it's like, oh, this is the one person that's going to, fill the hole inside me. This is the missing piece of my heart. These are two puzzle pieces to just pile on the cliches. But yeah, I hand in hand with that often go these, conservative stereotypes. I would say when I'm writing, I do try to fight for a, dimensional female character, or at least somebody who has agency, like in Serving My Enemy Alpha, even though the main character is sentenced to be a maid at the pack house for getting on enemy territory. But regardless, she does have some agency in the story, and she's concocting schemes to, get out of her situation. But yeah, I would love to see more vertical dramas where women are maybe playing a different role, a more active role, and maybe there are some out there, but yeah, I would say like on the whole, the trend is more conservative, and that's a shame.
Do you think this format, this market will grow, will emerge more, and is it something which will be much stronger in the future, maybe?
Yeah, I think, we've been talking mostly about these, soapy romance verticals I work in. I think it is on the cusp of evolving. I was part of this panel at Berlin Film Festival last month, and I got a look at some of these new series coming from Red Pony, for instance, and I did see something different right away, with the short, clips I saw. And it was, yeah, was not a werewolf meets girl kind of story that, that I've written, which, I think also great that there's werewolf stories for people to watch. But, I think the medium of watching a serialized story on the phone, I think that's going to stick around. But yeah, I think we're on the verge of seeing a more diversity in the stories being told, and also, I don't know, more unique stories. Maybe people are going to be putting a little more budget into it, so there can be more of a development process, so there can be higher quality, productions to see on your phone. I mean, obviously, there's the potential pitfall of becoming the next Quibi, which was a vertical video, high budget, wrong timing, big mistake for the Hollywood studios. But yeah, I think now that people kind of have figured out what it is, what the formula is that are getting eyes to the phone to watch serialized stuff, I think there's a lot of potential, and I think it's an interesting space for screenwriters, especially, to get in on right now.
Ja, soweit dein Gespräch mit Will Buckingham zu dem neuen Format Mikrodrama. Aber du hast uns auch noch einen Hinweis, wo man diese Sachen überhaupt sich angucken kann.
Genau, also die beiden Sachen, über die wir jetzt gesprochen haben, die Will Buckingham geschrieben hat, kann man einfach auf YouTube angucken. Das hat auch den Vorteil, dass man das so in einem Stück angucken kann und nicht immer die kleinen Clips wieder neu starten muss. Das ist einmal Matrimony, also nicht, es ist wie Matrimony als Ehe, aber es ist mit Geld verbunden, Matrimony. Und das andere ist Serving My Enemy Alpha. Also diese Titel kann man bei YouTube einfach in die Suchfunktion eingeben, dann wird man es finden. Ansonsten gibt es eben diese großen Plattformen, die speziell dieses Format anbieten. Das wäre einmal Dramabox oder MyDrama gibt es auch. Oder das bekannteste ist wahrscheinlich Real Short in einem Wort. Das kann man alles im Internet leicht finden. Da kann man sich das mal angucken. Es ist schon spannend.
Ja gut, wir wünschen euch alles Gute, bleibt uns gewogen und bis zum nächsten Mal.